Mysterio Lionel! Extraordinario! Magnifico!
Welcome to a brand new episode of the Football Corner, Muncher's very own home for all things football. My name is Vikram.
My name is Shreyas.
If you guys are new or old listeners, you can find us wherever you get your podcasts, Google, Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, and more.
And don't forget to follow us on all social media. That's at Muncher Podcast.
So today we have a pretty interesting episode lined up. First, we are going to be declaring who we think are the top 10 teams in the English Premier League based on what we saw the last season. And then we're also going to be taking a look at the quarterfinals for the UEFA Champions League and seeding our top 8 teams, which means that whoever we seed first is the team that we think is going to take it all at the end of the Champions League knockout competition that's going to be held in Portugal. So, Shreyas, why don't we jump right in and talk about the EPL top 10?
No, but what about the Italian league, dude? Like, do you not want to talk about what's brewing at Juventus?
Oh, you mean like a certain Andrea Pirlo?
I mean a very certain Andrea Pirlo who has legendary status as a player and as manager is a huge question mark. But hey, what else is up?
Yeah, no, it's cool, man. We don't need to waste too much time on that. It's perfectly normal for an under 23 manager who's been there for 10 days to just be thrust into the limelight. So I honestly have a lot of thoughts about this, but I don't wanna spend the entire episode ranting about that right now. Maybe just let me absorb this for a few more days, and why don't we just touch upon this in the next episode? TLDR, I'm freaking out right now. All right, so let's dive into the top 10 EPL teams according to us. So, Shreyas, how we can do this is let me tell the listeners my top 10, and then you can tell the listeners your top, and then we can just jump into a deep dive. How about that?
Sounds good. Let's go.
All right. So my top 10, and I'd like you to keep quiet while I recite my top 10 because I know you'll have thoughts. All right.
Can I at least like emote and sigh and
silence. Otherwise, I'm going to mute you right now.
Okay.
All right. So my top 10, Liverpool, number one, Manchester City, number two, Chelsea, number three, Wolves, number four, Manchester United, number five, Leicester City, number six, Sheffield United, number seven. Arsenal and Spurs are eighth and ninth. I can't decide which is which. And this is weird. Newcastle's my 10th best team in the Premier League.
Interesting.
All right, so let's hear yours.
I mean, mine's very different. Not just like a little different. Mine's very different. Okay, so I have actually Sheffield at number one.
Okay.
And I have Southampton at number two. I have Liverpool at number three, Wolves four, Chelsea five, Leicester six, Burnley seven, and then my last three are rounded off with United, Arsenal, and then City.
Manchester City is your 10th best team in the Premier League.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm sure we'll have enough time to get to that, but I can very much justify that. And this is taking into consideration their Premier League season 19-20 and nothing else. Although I still think they have a very good chance of winning the Champions League.
I agree. No, that, as it should be. Like, it's very easy to just focus on everything that's happened post-restart because that's what's fresh in our mind.
Right.
It's very important to be objective here. And I'm glad you say that you've been. Your list does not sound like you've been. you say, all right, let's deep dive. All right. So let's just use my list as sort of a point of view. Sure. Here. Liverpool, number one. Where do you have Liverpool ranked?
Three.
Okay. Any reasoning there?
Yeah. See, the thing is, look, I don't want to take anything away from them. I know that this has been a long time coming, especially from last season, the winning the Champions League and the finals and stuff. However, just the comments, the media, and everything else that's surrounding this, situation, especially with the pandemic and restart and everything. It's almost like they are so satisfied doing what they've done that as soon as restart happened, it's almost like they tapered off and they were only like playing for the sake of playing. Like, I remember this one goal that Van Dijk conceded where he was literally out-muscled by someone who's almost half his size and he's complaining for the goal.
Wait, so sorry to cut you off. This Van Dijk example, you're saying this is after the restart, this happened right now?
Yes.
I mean, that might be one off, man, because if you think about Van Dijk and the past two seasons, in fact, that top down approach that you've been talking about has been pretty well embodied by these guys.
No, I get that. I'm just saying that as a Chelsea supporter, or maybe as someone who supports City or United or maybe even Arsenal, I'd be licking my fingers and saying that there is a good chance that Liverpool may not be able to compete for number one spot come next year. I think they're going to be maybe second or third, because it's almost like, oh, there's a chink in the armor, and the second they have this understanding or they've reached a certain level, that they'll taper off from there. Look, they managed their, or rather they didn't have to manage injuries as well. And the reason why City's so far back down is because they just struggled so badly with that back line and the number of, and you know, the kind of money they spend on defenders, etc. We'll get to City later, but
that case could have been made last season as well, when City won and Liverpool was without their front three together for basically the entire season.
Exactly. So that's what I'm saying, that when I started watching football, it was the Arsenals and the Uniteds, you know, not just winning one-off seasons. They were competing on all four fronts. Arsenal made the 2006 Champions League final. They lost to Barcelona. I've seen the unbeaten season of, Henry and unbeaten 49, all of that stuff. And it has always come, like, it's easy to see the Ronaldos, the Berbatovs, the Rooneys scoring those goals, those counter-attacks, you know, attacking football, all of that jazz. But from a season perspective, over a number of seasons, you always see how they manage their injuries the best. And with Liverpool not having their front three last season, with City struggling big time with their back line, it's so clear to see how they've struggled. With, you know, it's the same thing with Chelsea. It's the same thing with United. It's either injuries or players not turning up with Pogba and stuff. So what I've seen from Liverpool is great. Now the next step for Klopp and for them is consistency. They've shown it to a certain extent with serious-ass success in the Champions League. They're not here this time. Atletico took care of that. Thank you very much. But that's what I'm saying. You know, this getting rid of the, you know, getting knocked out of the Champions League, losing the way they've lost some games. You know, they had so many chances to break records, and they're like, yo, we don't give, you know, two shits about records. We don't want to make a century of points. You know, 99 is more than enough. We're still 18 points ahead of City. You'd never hear Guardiola saying that. You'll never hear Jose saying that. So, like, these guys live and breathe on competitiveness and winning. And somehow just Klopp being the nice guy he is and having this happy big family, you know, that's great. And kudos to Liverpool. I'm a big Klopp fan. I've followed him from Dortmund. I really like, you know, what the guy does and how he embodies everything that's going on. Even the fact that, you know, there were a lot of conversations that he had with, you know, Timo Werner. Timo Werner was supposed to go to freaking Liverpool. And there were no guarantees that he'll have a first choice, first team spot, which is why they're like, we cannot spend this kind of money in this, you know, pandemic market on a squad player who will potentially become first team. Because, yeah, who would want to disturb their front three? You know, Timo Werner cannot be another Divock Origi. So, you know, and I followed all that. I appreciate, you know, everything that's gone on. And even that Chelsea-Liverpool match where Liverpool already won and then there was some stuff going on. And, like, Lampard showed him some stuff. Like, there was a lot of lip reading. There was a lot of, you know, mics and this match was shown without any crowd audience as well. I mean, without the crowd replication noise as well. So Lampard, in a way, said, you've just won one freaking title. Take it easy. You know, like show respect. So that's what I'm saying.
Okay, I need to stop you, dude. Wait. You just went off on like three tangents in the same like 2-minute stretch. The Lampard thing, I think, was completely stupid. I think it was as much Lampard's fault as it was Liverpool's bench. Because I feel like it was someone on Liverpool's bench or like their squad, the coaching staff instigated it. Right. Lampard should not be talking back. Yeah, he should not be saying that stuff. He's just being a sore loser there. I think Liverpool did not benefit from the break. They lost all their momentum. And if COVID wouldn't have happened and the season would have continued as normal, we probably would have seen a different Liverpool play because they were still in that frame of mind. It's very hard to slip in and out of that frame of mind. So for them to take it easy a little bit after the break is, I think, completely understandable, especially coming from the point of view of the next season. I think Liverpool is poised to start the next season very, very well. Only because A, they're not in the Champions League, so August is going to be really light on them. And B, the restart games, they actually took it a little easy. So they didn't force their players to perform at 100% because they didn't need to, I think. Right? There were other teams that were like the Chelsea's and United's and all of these guys and Arsenal's and Chelsea's in the FA Cup and stuff. For example, who had to push their squad really, really hard from the get-go because each and every match mattered. Whereas with Liverpool, it kind of didn't. So for them to relax a little bit, I totally get it. In terms of consistency, I think they've been the most consistent football team across the world for the past 3 years. Just in terms of what to expect, big games, small games, the hunger to play. City actually matches them, in my book, quite a bit. But just like you mentioned, for whatever reasons, they couldn't do it this season. So I actually think like, It's very hard to look at a team that's been doing so consistently well for so long, and when they drop slightly from that level of consistency, it's very easy to say that team's not doing well, whereas they're still doing much better. A case in point, Lionel Messi at Barcelona. If he doesn't score 45 goals in a season, he's not had a good season. I think that's absolute nonsense, because his season is still by far the best season compared to the guy who's second best, right? So it's easy to say that they're not the best, but in my book, they're still the best in the Premier League. It's just other teams have been punching above their weight, so they seem better than they are. But that doesn't mean they're any close to Liverpool in my book. So I would stick to my number one. I hear you and your thoughts for number three. Why don't we move on? I had City at number two, and you had City in number 10, but I guess you've kind of told me why already.
I mean, it's not just a backline. It was this whole ban thing. It was, you know, this guy spent, God knows, but like some 300 million on defenders, out of which, you know, he still has to use Fernandinho as a center back. You know, the whole syndrome of Pep moving on from, you know, in that 3 to 4 year, you know, time period, and he's already past that. So does he still stick on? Is it dependent on Champions League? You know, they're in this weird transition phase where, you know, they've lost David Silva. They're losing a bunch of other senior players. They have to replace, you know, Aguero. They have to replace, you know, Fernandinho. And, you know, most expensive signing, Rodri, he's come in. He's been a little better than okay. And sure, we'll give him time. You know, KDB's taken up that mantle of what Silva used to be a few years ago. Bernardo's there. Sure, Raheem will do his thing. But again, you know, minus their Champions League, you know, exploits and beating Madrid and stuff. Again, they don't seem invulnerable. They don't seem, you know, unbeatable anymore. So, yeah, and considering the manner in which they lost the league was just like, if I'm a City fan, I would be fuming at the points difference, at, you know, the way, you know, things have turned out, you know, left back situations. That kind of money, and they still can't solve. Sure, Kyle Walker's the best right back or right center back. I'd say one of the best, if not the best. But besides that, they have no one. So they have a lot of stuff to sort out.
They have João Cancelo. Why do people forget that João Cancelo is a thing? Give him back. Give him back to Juventus right now.
Exactly my point. There you go. So I know, just like, if I'm a City fan, and if I know that that's the kind of football we can play, if I know the way we eliminated Madrid, why are we 18 points behind? Why are we not closer? Why are we not sorting out this stuff? If Pep is so smart, and if money is literally available to the point that they can freaking flout rules, why are we not sorting that out? It's not like it happened as of yesterday. Fernandinho's been playing that position for God knows how long. We've heard of the Zinchenkos and the Javi Garcias and God knows who all. They spent, you know, tons on Mendy, and sure, his whip crosses are, you know, on a platter, on a silver platter, but still, that backline is obnoxious. Like, to see Pulisic, the way he scored against City, I was like, wow, that's embarrassing.
Yeah, so, I mean, that backline, even including Dinho playing in the centre-back role, was not a good look.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, minus their jerseys, which look insane for next season, I think they've still got a lot to figure out.
All right, so we understand they're in the top 10 because of their jerseys. Otherwise, they wouldn't be there. Moving on. I still have them at number two. Clearly the second best team in the league. Clearly not the third best in my book. So it's pretty easy to slot them in. I think the restart form was just amazing. So it was like icing on the cake. And we'll find out further on in the episode. But I think they'll have a decent run with the Champions League as well. For my third, I have Chelsea. So
yay. This is
completely unexpected for me. They've punched above their weight. No transfers. This was not to be expected. I think, in my mind, a good finish for Chelsea would have been Europa League places. So for them to finish where they finished, and they were super leaky, which is fine. But they compensated with a lot of goal scoring. And just to see Frank Lampard sort of juice out this energy and this level of play from these young kids, I had a lot of fun watching it, man. You know what I didn't like, though? Is the person manager Frank Lampard.
Ouch.
I think he's a douchebag, dude.
What?
Yeah, and I did not expect that from him. I never loved him as a player, but I knew, like, again, we've spoken about this so much. Like, it's very clear when you see certain players play that tactically they're all there. They know exactly what's happening with all the players on the pitch. And you know that those are the kind of players who go on to become good coaches. So with Lampard, it was evident, like, even like middle of his career, I could always see that he's going to become a good coach. But you never really saw a lot of Frank Lampard in the media, right? It was always like to the point Frank Lampard, very concise with his answers and stuff.
Right.
Very honest if they've lost, very honest if they won. So that's the kind of guy that I expected when manager Frank Lampard became a part of our lives. But gotta tell you, dude, he's a douchebag. I don't like it one bit.
What? Like, was it just a local thing?
No. I don't like the fact that he's a douchebag one bit. I mean, what I mean to say is I want him to be a nice, likable guy. But he's not a nice, likable guy, which is not a prerequisite for a manager, especially in EPL. I would much rather you be a dick, because that's how you survive. But he's just like an unnecessary douchebag. And no, this is not the Liverpool incident. In my mind, it was established much before that.
But yeah, again, I'm not fully understanding or able to take in why you think he's a douchebag.
I don't know. It's just a vibe, dude. There's nothing I can point you to. Ki ye dekh apne douchebag ko. But it's just like a vibe I get. It's just the smell in the air whenever Frank Lampard comes on TV, I guess.
I mean, I get it. Maybe he seems a little too robotic, a little too like everything he's saying.
Robotic at all. He actually seems very
pissed and bored and like stuck up.
Pissed, sure. But I would expect you to be. You're a manager of an English Premier League club. But just overall negative, if you know what I mean. Like his answer to every question, his take, he's always on edge. He's always ready to like... It's like he always has a rebuttal up his sleeve.
Dude, like, how would you feel with two transfer bans? I mean, two windows in a ban.
You're coming into the club knowing all of that.
Yeah,
that does not give you the right to be a douchebag.
Your footballing rival can pay their way for any freaking ban.
You know all of this. You played for that footballing rival in the last part of your career. All of these things you know.
But and he scored against Chelsea while he played for that rival.
Yeah, he scored. I think at City he was like a better super sub than Chicharito or something. Right? he would come in and score and leave. He was a better super sub than Ole.
Interesting. But are you done with shitting on Frank Lampard?
I'm not. I've given Chelsea my third spot. I'm saying they like as a team he did super well. What I was saying was as a side note, the person who is the manager, who's also Frank Lampard, is the douchebag. But he did super well with the team, man. Chelsea are number three for me.
Right. So, I mean, Chelsea are actually number five for me. And they would have been higher. And that's the thing. I mean, I'm sure Lampard and co. also feel that they don't want to rest on their laurels that, oh, we overachieved or we did better than we expected. Sure, even I genuinely thought a fifth, sixth would have been great. You know, just what we thought we should get. And I think we would have made second place if just seeing the way things started, if there was consistency with Tammy, if our defense was a little better, if the world's most expensive keeper would have half shown his value. We would have been not even third, but easily second place. I mean, in the manner that we've lost matches, in the manner that we've conceded goals, it was just really. We made Sheffield, who's my number one team, we made them look like Barcelona, bro. Like the three goals that they scored against us.
Those are the games where he's actually going to learn from, right? You can't expect him to come in and have smooth sailing across all fixtures. It's very understandable to have these sort of hiccups. And big games, small games are games that he learns from. And it's not like he had a tremendous amount of experience managing, right? Like one season at Derby is not enough, definitely. So I think overall, look at the decision to bench Kepa end of season, especially restart.
Right.
Like those are things that experienced managers do. So he's actually shown a lot more promise than I feel was expected from him.
I agree. No, but from an attacking perspective, yes. But from a defensive perspective, like I followed his journey closely while he was at Derby, not only because it was Lampard, but also there were a few Chelsea players who were at loan at Derby, including Mason Mount. So even Derby, I think they finished, sixth or fifth or something like that.
They finished in the championship.
Right. And they just very narrowly lost out to, I think, Aston Villa last year in promotion. And it was Lampard versus Terry, Terry being the assistant manager, who might be Bournemouth manager. Anyways, so even then in that championship league, Derby was most susceptible to counterattacks. They were a team that was counterattacked the most. That just shows that, that just like lit a light bulb in my head that, Lampard doesn't know, how to like probably his defensive mentality as a coach is not 100% sure. Attacking, passing, tactics, all of that stuff. Like you said, as a player, it's clear to see that, if this player were to become a manager, he's going to freaking do well, or he has the potential to do well. All that's great. And he's checked off the right things, these substitutions, these young players managing the ban and all of that stuff. But when it comes to defense, you have the players and the ban and all that aside, I still don't see Lampard.
It's still only 2 years as a manager, so it's still a long road ahead. And from whatever we've seen from Lampard, even as a player or as a manager, is that he always adapts. Even as a player, he's always adaptive and he makes sure that he's at the top. So, you had the excuse of the Rudiger and Zumas and whatever, like lack of options and stuff like that. So let's see now that the ban's lifted and there's a war chest, and now's the crunch time next season. Like when a first grade center back comes in and the bucket is still as leaky, that's when Abramovich is going to be like, yep, you're out of here. So I agree. Next season's going to be a true test. I'm just saying from first season in the league, that's huge. First season in the Premier League is a huge, huge achievement to finish where he did. So that's why he is third on my list. I have Wolves as fourth on my list. I don't think there's any reasoning necessary to be given here. Fantastic season.
So, Wolves is fourth for me as well.
So that's awesome. I have Manchester United in fifth. And just a few things here, right? Okay. I think Bruno Fernandes completely saved their ass.
Yes.
Post-Bruno... and Mason Greenwood even after that. But I feel like post-Bruno, which is post-January, this team was actually a little more fun to watch. The game was more fluid. It was more attacking. It was a lot of running at opposition and stuff like that. And I feel like whatever Ole had been imagining or trying to sort of force this team to kind of started clicking. It was actually pretty delightful to watch these guys. And I'm happy it's coming together after so many years of this post-Ferguson depression era. They're fifth only because they could have been sixth or seventh as well, but they're fifth only because they ended up finishing third, which I think is huge. So if they would have finished fourth or fifth or whatever their position was pre-lockdown, and if that would have stayed the same, I think I would have had to put them like a sixth or a seventh. But just because they finished third, I have them in the fifth position for myself.
Interesting. I mean, they're eighth for me. And I'm on board with everything you said, and sure, Ole is doing the right things, and maybe not as quick as United fans would like to, but it's definitely headed in the right direction. But I still think they've got miles to go. We don't know what's happening with the Sancho acquisition, but I always compare Bruno's effect on the team to what Van Dijk did for Liverpool. But here's the difference. Liverpool were pretty much complete, and he was like that final missing piece, along with maybe Alisson, to sort out the defense. And a lot of managers have said this. Attacking and goals win you games. Defense wins you titles. And that's probably how Klopp and all, you know, experience that. And it's so, you know, easy for us to see with the back line of, you know, Andrew Robertson, Trent Alexander-Arnold, who are second and third respectively on the assist table at 13 and 12, more than Salah, which is just insane. Fernandes is pretty much the only bright spark or the brightest spark, whereas he doesn't have, you know, like the other bright sparks are not as bright as him. Sure, Martial is finally filling in that number nine role. Great. Rashford has been a great servant on the wing. Mason Greenwood just came out of freaking nowhere. But that's the thing. Where is Pogba? Matic is too old. Luke Shaw is great, but I was just reading this today. He has 9 assists in 156 games. That is not a good number for a left back, for an attacking left back.
They have Brendan Williams, who's going to do that job from now on. And Luke Shaw is going to be like a LCB in that three-man back line.
Maybe, so, but then, yeah, that's what I'm saying. The money that they spend, you know, they have probably one of the best keepers in the world who's not had good form since probably 2018 World Cup. Harry Maguire, in his first season, he's already captain. So, you know, Ole still got a lot of things to figure out. And even this season, I think for both Chelsea and United, it's because, you know, Spurs weren't there, Arsenal wasn't there, Leicester tapered off. So they were kind of lucky to make that, you know, third and fourth position.
Yeah, I actually agree with that. I think a lot of things worked out in their favor. And like you said, they have a lot to figure out. I, in fact, was heavily on the bandwagon that Ole should have been let go in like October last year.
Yes.
But the fact that they gave him this time, which I'm very happy that they did, because they didn't give anyone time. There was a lot of pressure on each and every coach who came in after Ferguson. They should have given David Moyes this kind of time. I don't even like David Moyes that much. I think his confidence is shot to shit now. He's never going to be a top-level manager. But right. When at that point of time, when he did come into United, he was actually a great manager. If you remember those Everton teams with Fellaini and all of those guys, they were actually the Leicesters of today. They were,
absolutely.
They were teams that were finishing like fourth, fifth, sixth every season without any money injection. So he was a good manager, and they should have given him that much time. So if it takes you 7 years to realize that you have to give a manager time, so be it. I'm just happy that they did it, and I'm happy that it's coming together. Like you said, there's a lot to be figured out. Harry Maguire played each and every minute of their Premier League campaign, but he still has a lot to figure out as a player, according to me.
Right.
Paul Pogba injured, I don't want to stay here, comes back, likes Bruno, all of a sudden they're finally gelling. I'm just happy it's all coming together, man. And the only reason, luck or not, that they're fifth in my table is because they finished third. And they could have just as easily not finished third, and then they could have just as easily been lower down. So it's just a lot of moving pieces coming together, but it is what it is. Moving on, I have Leicester in my sixth position, man.
Same.
That restart form was so disappointing. I can't tell if they were more disappointing or was Lazio's restart form more disappointing. They literally, they are the only reasons that they did not finish third and they finished fifth, which is going to sting. But considering what they did before that, before the lockdown, they had an amazing, amazing season. Trying really hard to not have the restart form sort of weigh my decision here. But the fact that that form led to them dropping two positions on a table, it's huge. And it's because it's Champions League to Europa League, huge. So they should be higher, but I can't seem to force them anywhere.
Look, I mean, everyone expected, you know, the usual top four, top six to compete for those Champions League places. And for Leicester to do that with their budget, with their players, Vardy being, you know, top scorer, freaking 23 goals at age, you know, 30 plus is just insane. And I'm not a big fan of Brendan Rodgers, I think mostly because of his Liverpool experience. But he was at Chelsea Reserves, and then he was at Swansea. And he did a great job, all these places. And again, I think it's big fish, small pond syndrome, where if he's away from the spotlight and he's not at this crazy ass big club where, you know, he has these objectives and this pressure, and I think it just suits him better. And the systems he's played, the players he's got in, I really like the players they've got in. James Maddison, I'm surprised he's still at Leicester. United were bidding for him for quite a bit. I don't know what's going to happen there. Just the setup they have, you know, Ayoze Perez, they made the loan permanent from Monaco for Tielemans. So yeah, it's just a young, vibrant squad. They can do different things. I think the only hard time they're going to have is replacing Jamie Vardy at age 30 plus, still running the way he does, scoring these goals. I don't know where they're going to find a alternative.
I don't even know if they need a replacement. Who knows, man? Jamie Vardy can just keep doing his thing for like 5 more years.
But that's the thing. I mean, look at Lewandowski, look at Messi, look at Ronaldo, look how they've changed their games, and Aguero maybe even. Or even if you look at Ruud van Nistelrooy from, you know, United to Madrid and then everything else he did. These players, like, they have to adapt. David Silva is a great example. At age 34, he, you know, like you just said, we were talking off mic, where he's going to kill it at Lazio, probably, with the nice and easy slow game, building stuff up. So the thing with Vardy is that there's a great Tifo video where they've analyzed all 100 goals that he scored, or his first 100 goals, rather. And they said they're majorly tricking the back line into getting that offside trap, but he beats it and then he just runs his ass off. Or, you know, he's involved in a little bit of interplay, but they're majority related to his own ability to run like, you know, there's no tomorrow. And at age 30 plus, that's obviously going to taper off. And how do you adjust that game? How do you, like, look how Ronaldo, he doesn't do the dribbling and the stepovers anymore. Look at Messi, he's become a playmaker with the assists. Still fills in with a goal every now and then, or pretty much too frequently. Look at freaking Lewandowski. He used to batter everyone at Dortmund. Now he's just a penalty box, right place, right time, putting in assists for Gnabry and stuff. I don't know how Vardy is going to do that. Like you said, maybe he doesn't need to do that because he's still running his ass off. No, as far as Leicester and Brendan Rodgers is concerned, I think they've definitely punched above their weight, and it sucks that they couldn't continue on that form restart. But if anyone of Chelsea, Arsenal, United taper off next season, we know that teams like Leicester and Wolves, Leicester especially, they're going to be, you know, aching to get into, if not the Champions League, at least the Europa League. So kudos to these guys. And I, like I said, I do not like Brendan Rodgers.
Yes, I know your thoughts about Brendan Rodgers. All right, well, let's just move on. We both have Leicester at 6th. I have Sheffield United at 7th. Again, just like Wolves, absolutely no reasoning needed to be given here. Fantastic season. Complete, I think, the most unexpected out of everyone in the top 10. No one expected Sheffield to be playing the way they played, to finish in the 9th position as well. I think the last maybe 6 or 8 fixtures kind of let them down, because they might have finished even above then. But to finish like just behind Arsenal, to finish above even an Everton or a Southampton, very, very promising. So, I have them in 7th. Where do you have Sheffield ranked?
Number one.
Well, number one is a little generous, dude, don't you think?
No, so look, they came out of nowhere. I want to call it number 7, you know, Lundstrom, but it's not Lundstrom. I've seen, you know, we both have seen what they've done. It's probably 5, 6, 7, 8 players. And it's the manager. Like, you can't do this consistently over a 38-match season to finish like that and you know, beat a lot of teams the way they have beaten them. And like I said, apart from Lundstrom, you probably haven't heard of these other players that, you know, have also performed really, really well. And huge credit to Chris Wilder. I think if there's any bigger club looking for a manager, I think Chris Wilder should be number one option for them.
I think, yeah, the Chris Wilder stock's definitely risen. The only thing is, like, on paper, after the season, like, even during the season, right, I was on the Sheffield hype train. And then, you know, like, I think it almost reached a level where, for me particularly, I imagined them to be even better than they actually were. And that tends to happen when underdogs start performing really, really well. You just try to blow them up in your mind. So if you look at the table and the final standings, I mean, they finished level on points with Burnley. They're just ahead on goal difference. They're only 2 points ahead of Southampton. So it's not like they're comfortably in nine. They could have just as easily been 11th or something like that as well, right? But that coupled with the fact, with everything that you said about how they played, they were not supposed to be here. They could have just as easily been in the relegation zone given the squad that they had. So Chris Wilder and the team, what they drummed up, I mean, I only think it merits like a seventh, maybe a sixth position, but number one's kind of crazy, bro.
I mean, look, this is why I love the Premier League. On any given day, there is no one team that is a clear winner. There's never a David versus Goliath. Like, I remember how Norwich were killing it with, you know, Cantwell and Timo Pukki, and then they just, you know, got relegated.
That was like the first 2 weeks where I think the first game, their first game was Liverpool, where right. they really made it hard for Liverpool, and Klopp's like, oh, they're a wily team, huh? Just like, be careful and stuff. So you're like, whoa, what is Norwich? And then Timo Pukki just being a fantasy hero just because he costs so little and stuff. But yeah, it got pretty clear that they're not going to be top 10 or top. Like, a lot of people said they were top 10 material, right? I think that last is something that was unexpected for Norwich, but it is what it is.
Right. So, yeah, I love the Premier League because of teams like Burnley, like Wolves, like Sheffield, where, you know, when you do have teams like Everton and Spurs, you know, struggling, there will be teams lining up to take your position. Look at how Southampton did what they did with Danny Ings, you know, in restart. They just look like a whole new team altogether. So I am super excited for next season. I am super excited for, you know, these new teams. I'm looking at PremierLeague.com and they already have the new clubs up there. I see Fulham. I see Leeds. I see the crest on the top part of the website. And that's kind of, it's a little unnerving, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it should be fun, man. All right, so really quickly rounding up my last three. I have Arsenal and Spurs. So I'll just give you, I'll just try to paint a picture of what my notes look like. All right, I have Arsenal -8/9. I have Spurs -8/9. Next to Arsenal, I have written FA Cup winner. And next to Spurs, I've written the other team is Arsenal. So I don't know which one to put where. But I feel like I got to give it up to the FA Cup winners. So Arsenal takes my 8th and Spurs takes my 9th. I have honestly nothing to break down here. I think Arsenal had a very weird season, but they finished on a high. And given what Arteta did, especially the second half of his tenure, started showing a lot more promise. So there's a lot to be expected from this team next season, assuming they keep hold of Oba and keep him happy by paying him more money and also getting like more good players to stay around him. Real apparently wants Ceballos back because they don't want to spend too much and want to promote internally. And Lacazette is apparently being shopped around. So I'm not too sure that Arsenal's going to look the same in terms of the squad next season. But Arteta looked promising. And on the other hand, with Spurs, I mean, it's Jose, man. So, I mean, I don't know what to expect, honestly. I don't think Jose knows what to expect either. So let's see.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, no, just for Arsenal, I'll just say like what teams are doing with Ole and Lamps and Zidane and stuff. To see Arteta at Arsenal is a great sight, and I think he's doing the right stuff. So, but yeah, a lot of that hinges on Oba. So October 2nd, I think, is when the transfer window shuts. It's going to be a nervy couple of months for Arsenal.
That's true. And just to round up my 10, I have Newcastle in there, the only other team outside of the top 10 to make it here. Actually, I've forgotten which. Oh, Burnley. I didn't include Burnley because that would just make a top 10. I added Newcastle here because when the season started, if we remember, we had no hopes for Newcastle. We'd actually pegged them to be
relegated.
Relegation battle. We had no hopes from Steve Bruce. But so everything that he did, especially up until the rumors of the buyout started, I think it was actually a very good performance overall from the squad. Steve Bruce was managing. He started really rocky. The team started really rocky, but they stabilized and they only went upwards from there. And this whole buyout hoo-ha, man, I'm sure it distracted a lot of folks within the team, around the team and stuff, and it couldn't have helped their performance. So who knows, maybe if that wouldn't have come up and just been a major distraction, they could have finished not 13th, but like an 11th or a 10th, which would have been super great. So that, that's the only team outside of the top 10 that I have in my top 10, Newcastle.
Interesting. I mean, I'm hearing what you're saying. And in fact, special mention to St. Alan Maximan. He just came out of nowhere and he's a pretty, pretty exciting player. But yeah, like you said, pegged for relegation with this buyout stuff and to finish 13th, pretty, pretty freaking good.
All right. So that's our top 10 teams of the EPL. Pretty, very diverse. I feel like this is the most difference we've had whenever we've done some segment like this. There's a lot of overlapping, and that would always make me think that we think a lot alike in terms of football, but this just goes to show that we don't. So it is what it is. Just really quickly before signing off, now let's run through our seedings for the Champions League. So just to recap, we have quarterfinal round starting. Very, very interesting format. Very Euro World Cup like format.
This week,
teams are just going to line up in Portugal and play single elimination matches. So no away goals, no home away games, no two-legged ties. You come in, you do your business, and then you F off. So I think that's actually going to translate to a lot of exciting football because it takes the variance away. Predicting a World Cup final or a Euro final or a Champions League final also is super, super difficult because it's a final. It's a one-off game played at a neutral venue. You don't know what to expect, who's what the mindset's going to be, what the level of preparedness is going to be. So I feel like all the games now, starting with the quarterfinals, are going to be finals. So I'm just super excited to watch that and see how that unfolds. So in the first quarterfinal, we have Paris Saint-Germain lining up against Atlanta. Quarterfinal 2 is Leipzig lining up against Atletico Madrid. Quarterfinal 3, which is the game of the season, according to me, is Barcelona versus Bayern. And quarterfinal 4 is City against Lyon. So what we have done is we have taken these 8 teams and given them seedings 1 through 8. 1 meaning the team that we're going to think is going to take it all, and 8 meaning the team that is
least likely, the
furthest away from taking it all.
Right.
And I think over the course of just discussing our seedings, we're also going to end up predicting the quarterfinal games. So, Shreyas, why don't you go first in this one?
Cool. So, I'm going to go through this really quickly. Bayern to win it. Bayern's my number one. PSG second. City third. Barca fourth. Atletico fifth. Followed by Atlanta, Leipzig, and Lyon.
Interesting. So, I have Atlanta, Leipzig, and Lyon in the same order. 6, 7, 8. I have Bayern first. I have Barcelona second. I have City third. I have PSG and Atletico, it's tough, but I actually gave the S to Atletico in fourth and PSG to fifth.
No way. You think PSG... Okay, so just to quickly... Okay, so according to you, the winner of Bayern-Barca takes it all, correct?
Correct. On paper, yes.
On paper, but they have to face the winner of City-Lyon, which in most probability will be City. However, if you look at Paris, they have the easiest route to the final. They have to take care of Atlanta, and then the winner...
That is not easy. That is not easy. Trust me.
How long
can the world keep discounting this team? That team is hard to play, especially when it's not a two-legged tie. They're going to come in with nothing to lose. It's an Italian team that plays offensive football. I think that's always a very tricky proposition. So, and that coupled with PSG's lack of football, I think that's huge. I haven't seeded PSG fifth because of ability. I've seeded PSG fifth because all the teams and all the other 7 teams have been playing regular football since, I don't know, a month and a half now.
Yeah, so they may be tired. We've seen so many injuries.
I feel like that is much, much, much better to be, much, much better to have, as opposed to not having played football. Because the teams are going to be rusty. Mbappe got injured in that friendly, that Coupe de France, right, whatever the hell cup they call it. And he's come back. He's going to be on the bench. Neymar hasn't played so much. Like, I think that's actually going to pull PSG back. So just to throw them literally fresh without any game time, discounting like friendlies and stuff, which I don't think count really at all, and to throw them into a quarterfinal fixture with a team like Atlanta, who's warmed up. It's not like they're also cold. I think that's actually going to be a very tough proposition for them.
Interesting, interesting. Maybe, I mean, I have half a mind of putting some money on PSG against you, but I mean, everything that you're saying, you know, makes sense.
Look, I still seeded PSG over Atlanta. It's not like I think Atlanta is going to take it comfortably. But even if PSG go through, for example, I think Atletico is going to take the Atletico Leipzig fixture. PSG coming up, any team coming up against Atletico is, it's not easy, dude.
Simeone's cojones are so big that you think.
Yeah, like they become an extra defender essentially. Right. They add to the back line. So I don't agree that PSG has an easy route to the final.
Yeah, I mean, they have the easiest out of the top four, you know, seeds that we have. So,
but that's my reasoning for having PSG in fifth and Atletico in fourth. Atletico, I mean, it's in there because it's pedigree, Atletico and stuff. So, and Diego Simeone is has very interesting setups and tactics when it comes to knockout games, especially in like tourneys, especially in European tourneys. So I'm pretty hopeful of Atletico. PSG is fifth. Atlanta, I would love to have them up there, but I mean, the quality of teams there is pretty hard. I think my only surprise compared to your list is Barcelona in number two.
So, I mean, just considering the fact that it shouldn't be called Barcelona. It should be called Messi versus Bayern, because honestly, that team is non-existent except for Messi magic. Even that game against Napoli, sure, there was a lot of other stuff going on. You know, Suarez is doing his thing, but honestly, that team is in shambles. The way they lost the league was a disaster. I think
it's more about the organization being in shambles rather than the team. The team is doing all it can to keep itself up there, but the organization which supports that team is destroyed. So therefore, it has to have knock-on effects to that team as well. So it's really weird, man. Organization and then the next level, which is the manager. I don't even think Setien believes he's the manager still. He's probably just... I would love to be a fly on the wall of that dressing room when they're discussing, for example, tactics for the next game. I don't even know if Setien's doing any talking there. He's probably just sitting with a cup of coffee and be like, oh, be messy here. So it's really weird. I just think, again, the fact that it's knockout, single elimination, winner takes all each game, I think that counts in Barcelona's favor as opposed to counting against it. I feel like if this would have been the standard two-legged home-away tie, then Barcelona would have been much lower in my seedings.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, so, I think we haven't... at least I haven't taken into consideration the fact that it's not just one day, but it's literally like continuously this week, which is just going to be insane. So, yeah, looking forward to what happens come the end of the weekend.
And I think City just is... City's so hit or miss. And this is... if we look at City, especially during restart, I said in one of our earlier episodes when I saw the first few City games, I was like, okay, these guys are definitely in the running for the Champions League, just given how they're playing. But if you couple that with generally Guardiola and when it comes to big games and stuff, there is something that is missed there. So I would have happily put City in my number one seed, but I don't know, man. I think it's going to be the whoever takes the Bayern Barcelona game. I think they kind of take it all.
Maybe I'm tempted to go that way, but I just see everyone else having such easier, or at least on paper easier, you know, duels. City, PSG, maybe even Atletico Madrid for that matter. So all the other three ties minus the Barca Bayern big one. It could be any one of them also, because it could be just, you know, momentum. They're building momentum through this quarterfinal or pre-quarters and then semis. You know, they'll continue to build momentum and then final they just go all out. Whereas Barca Bayern maybe spent. Like, Chelsea did no favors to Bayern losing the way they did. So Bayern are going to have a real test, you know, on the plate against Barca.
And your momentum point is actually very interesting, because I think this being single elimination tournament style, assume Barcelona wins the Barcelona-Bayern game. Their confidence level is going to be at some other level, right? So, but then the deflator there is that they have to play City to advance to the final, which is always a tough proposition. But City and semi-finals of Champions League, we know the story there. So I don't know, man. Let's see. It's going to be pretty interesting. I'm so excited. This is how we're going to watch Champions League football. And it's just going to be this all-out blitz to the final. And we're just going to have a few days off. And then the rumblings about the new seasons. And then before we even know it, more football. Life is good, Chess.
And transfers, bro. Sandro Tonali, Kai Havertz. Where are we going with
you? You have to say Sandro Tonali and remind me of Juventus again and again. Can you stop? Can you please stop? I'm this close to having a nervous breakdown, dude.
Hopefully,
anyway, we're going to talk about it. We're going to talk a lot about Pirlo and Juventus next episode. Because I need to get
And his take on what the most important inventions are of this planet.
Everything Pirlo next episode. It's going to be very therapeutic for me. I can't wait. It's just too much going on for me to absorb right now. So I just want to like go and breathe. You got me worked up already, dude. All right, guys. So that wraps up this episode, although a little long, but it's pretty interesting. And we hope you guys enjoy. Let us know your thoughts on who you think are the top 10 teams of the EPL. And who you think is going to win this quarterfinal blitzkrieg version of Champions League that we're going to watch. Catch you guys next episode. Bye-bye.
Hey, you're managing your Juventus, Pirlo, nervous stuff better than you manage your FPL. So you're not doing so badly.
Bye-bye.
And don't forget to follow us on all social media at Muncha Podcasts.